Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. Kenny Bedwell here, and I have the one and only Dave Minipace with us. He is a co-host in the Northeast. He has and manages over 30 properties across the Northeast. And the reason why I wanted to bring him in and share his experiences with investing in the Northeast is because guess what? The Northeast is super seasonal, and we deal with a lot of price fluctuations and changes in revenue during certain months of the season. And guess what? We have to budget differently. We have to think differently, and we always have to be proactive. And so without further ado, I want to introduce you to Dave. Dave, welcome to the show.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. So Dave Menapace. So three things, but primarily I co-host. That's happening in New England. So I have a handful of properties in Cape Cod, which is really where we're going to center the discussion today, as well as South Shore, and then up in the Sunday River markets of Maine. Also run a consulting company, Launchpad Consulting. We help a bunch of homeowners launch and operate their short-term rentals, mainly in this market, but around the country. And we help people buy the homes and keep them out of bad deals or traps when they go to buy their short-term rental.
All right, yeah, that's great, man. So the biggest trap, I talked about this on the part one episode, and we were talking about this before we hit recording. So the biggest trap that we see, especially, so I'm in the Northeast too. I'm in New York, very seasonal. You're obviously Maine, Massachusetts, the Cape, like the entire area. Super, super seasonal markets, meaning we make all of our money during the peak money during the summertime. But these markets are awesome. We're having awesome returns. I know you've talked, and we can talk more about your properties and how well they're doing, but they're great, but they're seasonal. And the trap that I'm seeing investors making, like I talked about in the first episode, is this idea that they get in the high season, like we are right now. This is the middle of peak season. We're making all this money. Like I just, on a $350,000 property, I literally made 25 grand this month. Like it's just stupid. And, you know, like we're, you know, and that's insane. But if I go, wow, I made 25 grand this month on one property, and, you know, and I don't think about the future, I might miss those bookings, miss those opportunities. Yeah. If I get overconfident and cocky. So your experience, Dave, the people have heard from me already too much on this. So I want to hear from you. How do you do it? Because you're managing multiple properties across the Northeast. Tell me what you're doing to deal with, you know, the seasonality and the way your mindset is for the season.
Totally. And I'll echo, I just want to echo what you say. You know, so many people, we launch them in the winter, spring. And right now I'm going to talk specifically to Cape Cod. You know, it is a hyper seasonal market. Generally that this market, I kick it off right at kind of the beginning of April is when I start to see bookings. And, you know, now that we're on the backside of COVID, I see those bookings hold pretty strong through the end of October. It used to be kind of like weekends throughout the year, but there's still a way you can accomplish that if you kind of listen closely here. But to your point, it's funny, the amount of first-time short-term rental owners that are working with us, we get through June and they're like, I want to go buy another one. I'm like, tell me that in June of 2025 and we'll go searching for a house for you. But it is really, really interesting. You know, there's a whole lot of factors that will contribute to a successful short-term rental in Cape Cod. I want to run through that bullet point list because then the decisions that you make based on pricing and marketing, they're going to depend on some of these things that you might have in your home or not have in your home. And that's really going to dictate what your bookings look like, right? And what I will say is, you know, there's about, I think it's like 15,000 short-term rentals in Cape Cod. I still don't consider it to be saturated. For example, I'm at my cottage here in Dennisport. My house is the only house on this entire street, at least for like 200-300 yards towards the beach, that's a short-term rental, right? If this was really that saturated, every single one of these houses would be a short-term rental, and it's not. So there's a ton of people that come down to vacation that do not rent their home out, or if they did, they don't do it anymore. So I wouldn't get too wrapped around the axle on that. First thing is going to be location, right? So if you're looking to buy a home here in Cape Cod as a cash flow positive property, it's got to be walking distance to a beach, generally speaking. Beach or like a pond or a lake or something like that, but usually the beach. Why? Well, we found that occupancy is much stronger in those shoulder seasons, even end of March if it's warm. End of March through end of May is pretty solid prime vacation time here, especially if you have like a 2 or 3 bedroom home, something that you might be able to price. So it's affordable either for, you know, 2 guests or 5 to 6 guests, something like that. And the fall ends up doing really well for those guests as well. Something that you might not know is that most of these beaches are dog friendly outside of the summer. So allowing dogs and being walking distance to the beach is like a home run for guests that have a dog. The other thing is that, you know, in Cape Cod, funny enough, something that's going to help you beat out the competition is going to be like offering linens. Sounds insane. But like all of the big property management companies, they make you rent those separately or from another company or make the guests bring them. So there's some really easy like home runs that you can have. The other big thing that we did fully on every property this year, but it started last year, is we got rid of the 7-day Saturday to Saturday bookings. And, you know, we never did that in the off season anyways, but in the summer, how we're looking at the metrics, we've gone up in revenue almost 15% year over year, even this year, by having like a good revenue strategy. And I won't get into like the whole dynamics of it because that's a whole episode on itself. But what we found was getting away from that strategy actually made it so people were booking like 10 or 11 day vacations here in the summer instead of 7 days, which is fantastic. I'll take that all day long. It made our cleaners way happier. You know, one thing that you've talked about, it might have been about a year ago, but you talked about it with Bill Faith about how, you know, quantity of reviews can really help. There's an ROI on that. And then, of course, if there are good reviews, there's certainly an ROI on that as well. I feel like the number one thing that turns people away is just not good cleaning in the home. And so now that our cleaners aren't jammed up on Saturdays doing like 10, 12 properties, they can, a lot of times it's just the houses we're managing and own that they're able to get it, you know, that they're cleaning during the week. So they were actually, our cleaning company we use down here was able to staff up. They're able to pay their staff more money. And since we were really the only house during the turnover on like a Tuesday or Wednesday or a Sunday, whatever it might be, they're spending a lot more time in the home, which means it's getting cleaned a lot better. So at the end of the day, holistically, we're making a lot more money. Where I see a lot of people fail is they're trying to hold that same pricing in the shoulder season and in the off season. And the other place that people fail is they're trying to hold this summer's pricing for next summer. Right now in Price Labs, that's really, really easy to do. You know, after 270 days, we bump up the pricing by 30%. And that's how we're getting like $400, $500, $600 a night on a house that historically with an old manager might have been $200, $300 a night, like significantly more money. And we're already starting to lock in those bookings for next summer. So I'll just pause. I can go into some amenities too that help bring, you know, more revenue and year-round revenue, but I just kind of want to put that stuff as a baseline.
So I think that's really important because I've had some clients that, you know, in seasonal markets. Now you're obviously in the Cape, which is Northeast, and we talked about Northeast, but a lot of this applies really in most seasonal markets. And so I find you said one thing I've heard, and it's just like it's like a rookie mistake is this idea that what you make today in the summer, you're going to make again, like at the same rate, like the same ADR in the winter time.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just like not going to happen.
Right.
So right. I have to let people down slowly. I'm like, hey, remember there's seasonality in the market, right? Like remember that even though you're making really good money today in the winter time, things are going to get a little bit less, you know, and it could be 80% less in a lot of places. Like my market, it might be 90% less. And I personally know that. How are you telling your clients that you're consulting with, or they're buying with you? Yeah. You're also an agent up there too. How are you explaining that to your clients, you know, so that they can understand it, understand this concept of what true seasonality looks like?
I always try and ask them for the comps or where they got their information. And I always like to ask them what their goals are, right? A lot of times I find somebody comes in with a goal, and then it's not uncommon for their goal to change once they see some misinformation, but they don't know that it's misinformation. So it's amazing, you know, when people get the dollar signs in their eyes and it's like, you kind of have to reel it back. For example, you know, AirDNA will show any property that's like been on there even for a week, right? So if somebody launches middle of May and you're looking in August or early September to buy a home, I think it takes a month for it to get on there. So call it September when you're looking to buy a home after the season is up and there's more inventory to buy, and you start looking at dynamite houses that show that really high occupancy, AirDNA doesn't know any different. And I don't think a ton of people take stock in like their revenue calculator either, which is for the best in my opinion. But you can be like way, way off. Now, what I tell people to do, and again, it always tracks back to their goals. If it is a pure investor, right? Pure cash flow investor, maybe they want to use the house for a week in the summer with their family. Generally speaking, in this market, I'm telling them, you know, if either be really, really close to the beach or waterfront, or have a house with a pool. If you have a house with a pool, you do not have to be right on the beach. And in fact, there's like a whole avatar of guests that really, really loves that kind of home because they can spend some days at the beach, at the pool. If they have kids, pools are really fantastic. They don't have to get all sandy. If you're near the beach and you want to hold winter occupancy, I suggest getting a small hot tub. Doesn't have to be huge. Doesn't have to be a $15,000 hot tub. There's not a ton of data on this, but I say, look, do things that are going to be interesting to everyone in the family. So things like a hot tub, yes, you're not getting that for your summer renters. They don't really care about it here in Cape Cod. They do care about it in a lot of other summer markets that I have, but not here. But once you get to like October and November and December, you know, you have a lot of teachers too that like have time off around the holidays and things like that. They'd love nothing more than chilling in a hot tub in the winter in Cape Cod and just getting some time off. So, you know, there's these, I think a mistake and a trap a lot of people fall into is saying, well, none of the other houses have that. Why do I have to? Right. And what I'd like to say is, you know, if you want to stand out and be a top 1%, you know, these short-term rentals, they're like an ATM machine. If you don't put money into them, don't expect to be able to take money out of them either. And I think, you know, we're still in this phase where I think a lot of people just cut it too close with their budget and they have these grand ideas run at certain numbers. And I see it a lot of times, unfortunately, where people bow out from going the last 20% on their updates and reno and things like that, and just sort of feel like once I get the money, I'll make these updates, and it never, ever materializes. So, you know, things like a hot tub really do help in that winter occupancy and pull you through. I'm not a huge fan of midterm rentals in this market, and we can save that discussion too, but I'll pause there.
Well, I think that. So that's a really good point about the amenities, because when you're talking about the hot tub, I see a lot of people, like you said, the skimping. Like I literally just before this call, I had a conversation with a client and he was like, he's dumping a considerable amount into a property, but he's also doing a renovation. So I'm like, look, you're spending about 150K. Now, about 75,000 of that is towards the renovation, because he's got to update the bathrooms, kitchens, things like that. So it's like, okay, you got that. And then you're spending another 75 in a pretty popular market, but it's going to look good, but not great. And I'm like, let's say that this investment, 150,000, let's say it makes you 150,000. And the property has the potential to make 200,000 if you invest an extra 100K. Let's look at your cash flow. And the reality is, for every additional dollar that he makes, it literally almost translates directly to cash flow. So the return on spending that extra $100,000, he's like, I don't want to spend anymore. You know, like, I don't want to do this. Like, because it's like, it's just more money. And it's like, I get it, but your cash flow is going to go up. Like, it's literally like a 50% return, like just for spending that extra 100K. And 50% cash on cash, you know, everyone would be freaking out. But it's hard for people to wrap their minds around, like, spending the extra money to get squeeze the more dollars out of the property. Now, I'm a big one that says, like, there are diminishing returns for every dollar you spend, but you need to understand that if the property has a potential to do a certain amount and you don't invest in it, then it's never going to reach that potential. So I think that's interesting. And hot tubs are a great seasonal amenity, not necessarily a summertime amenity. I mean, even though maybe in the Cape that sometimes they do, but and swimming pools, very seasonal as well. And they help boost. So I had a client, or not a client. It was a comment on YouTube, one of my YouTube videos. And someone was like, how do you, it made me kind of chuckle. They're like, how do you budget? And I'm going to ask you this question. How do you budget for the off months on some of these bigger expensive properties where you're going to be lucky to break even, maybe you break even, but like, maybe you don't. Okay. And
yeah,
that's fine. Like, some of my months suck in the wintertime. So how do you budget for that? They asked, do you borrow money from other people to cover those expenses until you make money in the summertime?
No. Yeah. I mean, to that end, you know, for a long time, like, this market is so hyper seasonal that for a long time, we would accept our last guest right after Thanksgiving and literally just not have the calendar open again until like the first week of April.
And a lot of people still do that.
A lot of people do. Honestly, I would say a lot of my owners do that. They use like those 4 months as like a time to go visit the property, casually make some updates and like different things like that. There are still restaurants open here, not as many, but there's still restaurants and like good things to do. And it doesn't really snow here because we're right on the ocean. So that happens a lot. What I say though is, you know, when you're buying a property, you got to be smart with your budgeting. Obviously, you need to know what your monthly expenses are. And of course, they'll be up a little bit with electricity and a few things from guests using amenities and things like that. But, you know, forever, we would essentially shut down the bookings at the end of November, and we still had no problem covering the mortgage pretty much through till the next year. And it took a few years to finally get that to be higher and higher and higher so that we could like take that money, reinvest it, or owner distribution, things like that. And now I barely rent this out because I just use it the whole time. But what I do coach people on is pretend like zero income is coming in for like 3 or 4 months. And that's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean it's a bad investment. Again, you always got to start with whatever the owner's goals are. I usually call that like your job well done time. Like, enjoy the fruits of your labor, use the house. You weren't going to get a ton of bookings anyways, but you know, it goes back to the purchase, right? Buy something that's within your means and don't go just like blowing all the cash that you make in the peak seasons. Make sure you can budget it out and cover your costs. You know, what we always like doing was when we'd buy a home, because we have 2 short-term rentals, and we'd buy a home, we'd actually like dash away and make sure we had available at least like a full 6 months of just like reserve funds. Sometimes in the smaller houses, it's easier to do just like a full year, like 30-40K in like this thing we bought for 260 back in the day. So it's a different scenario than some of the bigger homes, but you know, factor that into your budget or like your startup cost, right? And you know, that's when you kind of get away from the cash on cash return a little bit, but just like see that you have that. And that's really going to be the game changer for you, especially in that first year. Because the other thing that I'll say, and you, I'm sure you see this too, is the properties that I launch, I have these 2 chalets side by side in one of the markets, and they're both gorgeous. And they're like the exact same thing. Very similar anyways. And one makes about 30% more than the other this year. Why? Well, it just has more reviews and has been online for longer. They both offer the same thing. The other one will catch up to that one by the end of this year. But I do find that the homes that are newer, unless you've gone the distance and you've got all these cool amenities, which is Cape Cod's an easy place to do that in because there's not a whole lot of places that offer much. you know, you do have to just like give things time, right? So when I actually write a pro forma now, it's really interesting. I show the cash on cash after 2 years and after 5 years. I show it after 1 year, but I expand it out. And then you could add, you know, return on equity as well. But again, it's just like, what are you looking at? And,
well,
you know,
there's always a ramp up period. A lot of people, the two things I hate in our space, and I think it's because of hotels. It has to be because of hotels, but people get so focused on like average daily rate, so ADR, and occupancy for the year. And I'm like, it changes every freaking month. Like, why is it like, it's like you should be focused on yearly gross revenue and then understanding when you're going to hit certain revenue numbers so you know how to budget your property. Like, I can't stand it when someone's like, well, what's your ADR? And I'm like, during the wintertime, which is like $300 on my one property, or $250,
I know,
which is my minimum. I'm only charge less than that. Or during the summertime when it's like $1,700 a night. Like,
yeah.
Which one? And they're like, oh, like, I didn't know you could do that. And it's like, it's seasonal here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even when I talk about like Newry and Bethel, I break it into four seasons.
Right. Exactly. It like really like, so it's like, it's more so of like, what am I grossing on a yearly basis? And then on a monthly basis, what is my occupancy and what is my, or my target ADR that I'm trying to hit? But we're making adjustments. We're making changes even during the high season. We're budgeting during the high season. You know, it's like this month, cool, I made $25,000. Well, sweet. I've got $25,000 of like money that I can go, I'll probably end up with 20 for cash, like cash flow. Like that's literally how much money, like cash flow, $20,000 in 1 month I can take, but I'm going to take literally like 10 or 15 and save. I have an amount. I say, look, I need at least $20,000 to last the winter months to cover all my expenses. I don't even have to rent the property out if I don't want to. I'm going to because I'm not going to be there, but like, I don't even have to rent it out and I'll be fine. But that's a different mentality than like going somewhere and just like letting it not, you know, not budgeting like that. It's just, you have to think differently with seasonality.
What I will say too, real quick, like one sort of differentiator also is that like the waterfront homes, even if it's not swimmable beachfront, but like the waterfront homes, if you have one of those in Cape Cod and you throw a hot tub in it, like on the deck or something like that, you're actually going to see at least weekends booked year round. That's like your one sort of like, that's a good card to play, but it is important that you put that hot tub there. Otherwise there's no reason for people to go outside in the winter on the deck in Cape Cod.
Right. Exactly. You know. Like, not going to be grilling, not going to be having a barbecue.
Yeah. And those properties are more expensive, obviously, but they're worth it.
What's really something funny, I get these questions from people in the Northeast. I don't know if you get them. Like, they're like, Dave, should I add a hot tub to my property? And you're like,
yes.
Duh. You're like, yeah. And they're like, well, there's not many properties with hot tubs in my market. And you're just like, stop thinking about the data, like of what's currently there. Think about your guest avatar and what they would want.
Yes.
And you'll be shocked.
And it's really funny. All the time. And the conversation I have is like, well, if you were going to book this property, would you be happier if it had a hot tub, or would you go searching for one that has one? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay. You know, up in Maine, I won't even manage a property if it doesn't have a hot tub. But like in Cape Cod and now in like South Shore, Massachusetts, I won't manage one there if it doesn't have one either. Cape Cod is so seasonal and so easy. It's like clockwork these days. It's a bit easier, but you know, hot tubs are one of those few expensive amenities that you can actually finance. And then it's essentially like your guests are paying for it. So it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty good choice in my opinion. At the end of the day, I think a lot of times we get away from thinking just like, would my guests want this? Would it keep somebody here? You know, and there's ways in a seasonal market to be that like one property that does get all the bookings. There are ways to do it. And to your point, it's not by doing what everyone else has been doing. it's by taking it a few steps before. So how do you know what that would be? Like, what's that aiming point? I love going and taking a look at some of the more advanced markets like Kissimmee, Florida, and the Smokies, and some of these other like really developed markets, and think like, are there features in some of those homes that I can then bring to Cape Cod? It could be an Instagram wall that's like where, you know, a fence is. Like, it could be outdoors, if you have room inside. It could be something else, but you know, detached garage, which is a very rare in Cape Cod. It's really rare to have a garage at all. But if you have a garage or a detached garage and like really going all the way to make that a cool, cool feature game room or movie theater, instantly you're going to get so many more bookings because you're the only one that has it, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it stands out. Stop the scroll, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's
I love it.
How you market your property. I tell people all the time, so it's like four revenue drivers for every property. You got location, quality, design, decor, and amenities. And every market's different. And I feel like a lot of the markets in the Northeast, location's obviously really, really important. Like being on the water versus off the water, you know, duh. Okay. But then if you go actually heavy on amenities rather than worrying about updating and having the nicest and fanciest property, like people don't actually care. Like so my property is some of it's updated, some of it's not. And it's really just not, like, I'm not even going to do it because I'm like, it's like $100,000. If I invest in amenities, like adding the hot tub or putting in the theater room or doing the game room, that's actually going to get me more attention. And I don't have to spend $100K to get that same revenue potential. And so, but it's amenities, then quality, then design the core. And I feel like that's like opportunity in these markets, you know?
Oh, totally. Totally. What do you totally think? Yeah. Yeah. Like, and in addition to that too, like, so for Cape Cod, like, why don't we riff on that for a minute too? Like a badass outdoor shower setup, not just like the four walls where people can see your feet under and you're kind of
with like a hose. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you don't even have a dry spot to like hang your clothing. Right. Like,
right.
You can't see it here, but we have this really awesome outdoor shower setup here that has a changing room, the shower area. And we were fortunate. We just bought the house and I had that. And we're like, this is super cool. And like, that's random. But again, it's like knowing what your guests want, right? And it's people in Cape Cod, it's really funny. They don't want just a place to like rinse the sand off. They're like, this is really cool.
Like, yeah.
It's really neat to just shower out here. Like, I'm going to take a half hour shower instead of a 2 minute shower. For us with little kids, we'll put like pots and pans in there and then let our kids go to town and they're like dancing in the rain and having all sorts of fun things going on. So, you know, really nice like outdoor spaces. Another thing that I find holds people deep into the fall is like outdoor kitchens that also have like a TV, sort of like a three season room. You can get a lot of people coming down to Cape Cod that want to do like a football party, like want to watch fall football, want to hit up the beach and throw a football around, want to be outside grilling. And again, it's like an ATM machine. Like, you're going to get out what you put in. In my opinion, with a lot of short-term rentals, aside from like throwing in an indoor pool like you see now all over the Smokies, it's hard to like overdo it. When it comes to amenities and design, I get it. Like, you might not want to put the nicest countertops in over other ones, but renovating a house and overdoing it is a lot different than creating an attractive, hospitable type of place to attract guests. It's hard to overdo it, in my opinion.
I really like that. Dave, how many properties do you own and manage now?
So we own two and we manage just under 30. I think we have signed on like 31 with a few going live soon. And about half of them are here in Cape Cod, which is where it all started in 2019. Some in South Shore, Massachusetts, and the rest are like, you've heard me talk about the market forever. We have about 15 properties up by Sunday River. And I love that market too. It's nice. Like, if you're in New England, I'll say this too. What I love about it is within a 3 to 4 hour drive, you can have two very, very different markets. And in my opinion, it's not like I've always enjoyed having two of them. We got the winter one that we do family stuff in. We got the summer one we do family stuff in. They complement each other really, really well. And what I'll say is a lot of people want all of that, but they never think to actually go and buy two houses. And you don't have to do them at the same time, but like, you know, Bill Faith talks about this a lot. Like, think about like your life plan and what you want, and you can set up shop in multiple markets and have them offset each other. So you have really good summer revenue, really good winter revenue as well.
Yeah. A lot of people, there's two camps I see. There's people who go and say, okay, I love that idea, and I'm going to go and do that in big popular markets that I personally know of. And you just can't do that today. You know what I mean? Like, you got to, like, it's got to be these areas that, you know, if you really want to have a beach market property and you want to have a ski or even a mountain, it's got to be in some different types of markets. It can't be the big popular ones.
I totally agree.
And I see people either just do that and then make a huge mistake and lose money, or they go, well, this isn't going to work. And then they pivot from that goal altogether when it could work in other markets. They just haven't done the research. So I think it's like, I don't know. Being in New York, I'm like, hey, it's funny because I'm not from here. I'm actually from the Southeast. And growing up, you like in the Southeast, you just have a disdain for the Northeast. You're just like, taxes and, you know, I'm not a political person, but you say taxes and liberals, you know, it's like, you just like, that's it. You know, that's what's up there.
Yeah.
And then being here and experiencing the opportunity. Okay. Yes, there are taxes and there are a lot of liberals, but that doesn't keep me from making any money. You know what I mean? Like, there's a ton of opportunity here, and we miss, I think a lot of people just have these misconceptions of these certain areas and they avoid it. You know, I hear people like, I said, it was funny. I sent an email. I'm like, speaking at one of Bill Faith's boot camps in New York. And I was like, hey guys, if you're in the area, come hang out. Let's like meet up while I'm there. And you know, cause you know, in New York City, there's people in New Jersey in that area who want to meet up. I was like, come meet up. And somebody like responded back. They're like, ew, New York, no thanks. And I was like, okay, like whatever, you don't have to come. And you know, it's like, there's other times, but other places, but I think there's a natural disdain for the Northeast, which keeps the herds out and provides a ton of opportunity for investors like you and me to find great properties, beat the competition, and not have to overwork like these people in the Smokies or Kissimmee, Orlando area, even more so. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, totally. And honestly, like I love these smaller local markets that you and I are really, really attuned to. And they're not even, they might be smaller geographically, right? But at the end of the day, people have been vacationing. I think I said this on a podcast with you a couple years ago. Since before California was a state, I always make the joke. I say, I could argue that the pilgrims came here on vacation. So it's like, this is
the, but, the OG vacation market, vacation market. All the other ones are just infants, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Vikings came here on vacation. So, but what I do like to say, you know, going back into like revenue and generating all that stuff, if revenue management hasn't been like high up on your radar, it's not that you need a revenue manager, but it's really smart to get educated on like at least the ins and outs of revenue management. Because, you know, what we've done in one way, we've been able to really hold occupancy at like 10, 20, 30% higher, especially in the shoulder seasons in a lot of these properties, is we start that competitive pricing usually like 2 to 3 weeks before what the data tells us is the booking window. That way it gets picked up by the algorithms. People see it. You catch some early birds that want to book out there. And before you know it, all of a sudden, what would have been like a $3,000 month turns into a $10,000 month. And understanding that, you know, I know it's easy for me because a lot of these big property managers are still doing like a 3-night minimum in September, where we do a two to three night, depending on when they're booking and how far out they're booking. And in October, we're all just flat 2-night minimum, but we know who the guests are that are booking those times of the year. And I'm like, I'll go to the grave. It's so rare that we have a party at a house. And a lot of these houses in Cape Cod are too small for a party. Like, I hate to break it to you, but 20 people aren't going to rage at 1,000 square foot home. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's not interesting to somebody. So you can price it less, even if you are getting $600, $700, $800 a night in the peak season. It's okay to charge $200 or $300 in the shoulder season, or even down to like $150 a night in the off season. And once people start realizing that, it's amazing how much more money they make and how they can hold higher occupancy in the off seasons. And if you do have higher occupancy, that too gets picked up by the algorithms on Airbnb and will actually go then help you in the high price nights in the summer. So there's a method to it, but it's good to just have some basic understanding of revenue management as you're starting to get into the short-term rental game, I've found.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes into this whole idea of like the biggest trap, you know, of being unprepared, because you do, like, this is part of it, like revenue management. You either learn how to do it or you should hire someone. There's not like this set it and forget it. I think everyone kind of knows that now. I've said that so many times on this podcast, but it's like, yeah. Can't do that. So you either got to learn it or you should hire someone if you're too lazy, which is fine. That's okay. But you're taking action each month, right? Like, you're doing things each month to basically stay ahead of it and not just like wait. And that's the problem with a lot of people, is they wait. It's like, let's not be reactionary. Let's be proactive. So anyway, Dave, I feel like we're wrapping up here, and this has been a great conversation. Really fun. Can you give me a just last minute advice? And we do this for every guest. It doesn't have to be about what we just talked about. It could be anything at all. Your hosts over 30 properties. What are some of the best ways people can cash flow positive? Give me one. Give me your best tip.
Location. You know, especially if we talk about Cape Cod, and I'll keep it brief because I know we're wrapping up. You know, my house is a 7-minute walk from the beach, and I make about 50% more than the same house that's 100 yards that way. Why? They can still walk to the beach. There's a double yellow line road that separates my house and theirs. People don't want their kids walking across a busy street, even if it's only 100 yards away. That house will cost $100,000 less than mine, but it's never going to make the same amount of money. And those are some of the things that, like, plugging in a rental property in AirDNA rental calculator, it's not going to understand that. And Zestimate on Zillow won't either. So, you know, really understanding and taking like a deep look at the data and the properties, and just be aware, especially in these seasonal beach market properties, is there like a main road that people are going to have to walk by that could really trip them up when trying to get to the beach in a non-stressful manner with kids? Because it is a lot of kids coming to these markets. So that'll be my advice there.
I love it. Well, Dave, thank you so much. And Dave, before we conclude here and wrap things up, what's the best way for people, if they want to get a hold of you, talk to you about your market, get some consulting, what can they do? How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, just head to davemenapace.com. Honestly, from there, you can kind of separate out and check out Launchpad Consulting, our short-term rental consulting business, where we help people launch properties all across the country. You can check out 5-Star Co-host. I really just manage in Massachusetts and Maine, but you can check that out. Or if you're looking to buy, you can hit us up, and we have a real estate team as well. So that's the best, davemenapace.com. Or last one, you can just hit me up on Instagram, dave_menapace, and shoot me a DM. I'd be happy to connect with you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dave, for being on here. This was such a pleasure. Good to connect with somebody else in the Northeast who loves the Northeast. Good STR market.
I love it.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And everybody listening, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cashflow Positive.